It's been a long primary season in the U.S. We have the presumptive nominees in place for both parties, but each side has taken some bruising beatings from the candidates and their supporters in the process. Whatever happened to thoughtful, reasoned public discussions on major issues in this country? Why are we so nasty to each other in televised debates, on social media, and on TV talk shows? Jim Hogan wanted to find out, so he asked many of the leading thinkers of our age about the topic and compiled their thoughts in his book, I'm Right and You're an Idiot, The Toxic State of Public Discourse and How to Clean It Up. Hogan is the president of the Vancouver, British Columbia PR firm Hogan & Associates. He says that today's rabid partisanship and poisonous rhetoric are the result of an accumulation of anger and frustration over the years.
Just like we can pollute the natural environment, we can pollute public conversations. And that the public square may not be as resilient as we think it is. And it's my sense that over time, the mistrust and the disengagement that accumulates from this type of ad hominem style of debate is something that leaves pollution. So it goes from election to election. It goes from issue to issue. I'm particularly interested in environmental issues, and I see it there. It is unbelievable, the acrimony and the toxic nature. And it's from all sides. You know, if you feel like you're right, it seems to give you permission to say just about damn near anything you want to about the other side.
Hogan says that Deborah Tannen, professor of linguistics at Georgetown University, wrote a book titled The Argument Culture, about how we become so used to the shrieking and naysaying in the public arena that eventually it becomes the new normal.
The way she describes it is that if you had ruckus outside your house at night, you'd open up the windows to find out what was going on. But if there's a ruckus every night, eventually you sort of batten down the windows and try to ignore it. And that is a big problem in a democracy because citizens cannot ignore issues. We need to make decisions about them collectively. So when it looks to your average person that the people who are involved in these issues are kind of suffering from this unbending one-sidedness and there's never any listening, it defies everything we learned in kindergarten and it leads to despair rather than understanding and people just disengage. Or worse, it could lead to more hatred.
The idea that our side must win is an old one. Hogan says that humans have divided into teams since the dawn of time, and in certain instances, it has served us well. However, when it comes to issues that affect us all in the modern world, this refusal to listen to the other side or consider the facts can create misinformation and promote a toxic atmosphere.
If some evidence about climate change comes along and you don't believe in climate change, you don't actually change your mind because of the new evidence. You basically change the evidence to fit the beliefs of your team. So that type of social atmosphere is fertile for the kinds of conversations that you hear coming out of the primaries.
When we choose a side and refuse to listen to anyone who doesn't agree with us, we can end up in an advocacy trap. Hogan says that not only do we think that the other side's ideas are flawed, but so are the people who hold them.
When you feel strongly about something, there's a psychology to being criticized. When somebody disagrees with you, you maybe at first you think that they're just wrong. But quite quickly, especially if they're strong in their views as well, that you start to feel that they're wrongdoers. And then it's not too far from that to a battle between good and evil. So you're the good guy and they're the bad guy. You're David and they're Goliath. And it's a fight. And you know you're right and you know what you're saying is right. And they're disagreeing with what's right. And they're disagreeing with something that you feel deeply about. And so that ends up creating this state that Roger Connor calls the advocacy trap, which you basically get yourself into a situation where you become more interested in defeating and demolishing the other side than you are in actually moving your issue forward.
Another attitude that stands in the way of productive debate is the inability to admit that your side is wrong or even that the other side might have a point. Hogan says that this can result in behavior that noted linguist and cognitive scientist Noam Chomsky describes in the book, If You Can't Answer an Argument, Shriek. Just rant, call people names, slander them, anything to undermine an argument you can't respond to. It's an impasse that won't be breached until each side realizes that being wrong isn't the end of the world.
Being wrong is not a flaw. We're all wrong. Every one of us is wrong at least a few times a day. So it's not like it's something that unusual. We should all be able to relate to it. And the fact that you have somebody who's a highly public figure admitting it in public, that's a great thing. I think it shows character. This idea that keeping in mind that you could be unknowingly under the influence of bias is a way to open your mind. And I think it's interesting when you pay attention to this, how it actually improves your communications, because it improves your listening, which is real communications. People are much more open and receptive to someone they feel is listening than to someone they feel is not listening or has no interest in what they think.
In addition to being able to listen and admit when they're wrong, Hogan says that there are other strategies groups and individuals can use to raise the level of debate, such as holding your beliefs lightly and walking a mile in the other side's shoes.
I think something just as simple as assuming that people who disagree with you are well-intentioned and not idiots, maybe until they prove otherwise, but at least starting with that assumption. And then also looking for what unites us rather than what divides us. Go spend some time with somebody whose ideology you don't particularly agree with and that you spend very little time with, and trying to really understand where they're coming from, trying to understand their concerns. You know, I do that. I sit on a board, which is one of the most influential environmental groups in Canada, the David Suzuki Foundation. I'm the chair, actually. And we have conservatives, our board. And it's very interesting. I find it fascinating. It adds a kind of a richness and diversity to the conversation that not everybody is just there with views from the left.
He says that people who advocate for issues in the public forum should also hone their storytelling skills, because there's no stronger way to get your point across.
If you don't tell your story very well, somebody else is going to come along and tell it for you, and it may not be very good. So you end up with this situation where you have, in the world of environment, the people who actually have the evidence often are not great communicators, scientists, who have an approach that is aimed at just sharing the evidence and being objective. When you basically have this belief that all you have to do is explain what's going on and explain the evidence and how it's reliable and so on, that misunderstanding about the power of reason in communication leads to a lot of opportunity for mischief makers who would rather people didn't understand what's going on. So I think learning these skills of narrative are really important.
Finally, Hogan says that showing respect for those who hold a different view on an issue and not treating them as the enemy can go a long way towards mutual understanding and maybe even sway some opinions.
David Suzuki and I spent an afternoon with Thich Nhat Hanh, who is a Zen Buddhist monk. And we were talking to him about advocacy, and he was talking about the need for bringing meditation into the world of environmental advocacy. And I said to him, you're not saying that we shouldn't be advocates and speak up on behalf of the environment, are you? And he had this way of kind of looking into your soul. He looked at me and he said, speak the truth, but not to punish. Now that is like probably the most important lesson of the book.
James Hogan has more ideas on why our public discourse has become so toxic and how we can clean it up in his book, I'm Right and You're an Idiot, available now from New Society Publishers. He invites listeners to visit his website at imrightandyoureanidiot.com to find out more about him and to read his blog. For more information about all of our guests, log on to our site at viewpointsonline.net. You can find archives of past programs there and on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm Gary Price.
Medicare and their list of suppliers continue to change. So if you have diabetes, it may affect where you get your testing supplies. But rest assured that your number one doctor-recommended one-touch testing supplies are always covered by Medicare Part B at your local pharmacy and select mail-order suppliers. Dr. Brian Levy, Chief Medical Officer at LifeScan, maker of one-touch products.
Some mail-order suppliers may offer a limited selection of diabetes testing supplies. They may try to switch you to a different brand, saying your current products are no longer covered. That's just not true. You are entitled to continue using the products you know and trust and that have been recommended by your healthcare professional at no additional cost.
Remember, you have a choice. Stay with the number one brand used by Medicare patients. For questions about coverage or where to get your one-touch testing supplies, call 1-844-942-2654 or visit www.onetouch.com/Medicare. Medicare Part B is not a guarantee of coverage and payment, which may be subject to coinsurance, deductible, and patient eligibility requirements.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.